Hi, y'all. This is Kristen Chenoweth.
Hi, I'm Gloria Stefan.
This is Sarah Bareilles.
Hi, I'm Patti LuPone.
This is Lin-Manuel Miranda. You're listening to the Broadway Podcast Network.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to Broadway Breakdown. My name is John Wiscavige.
And my name is Matt Koplik. Welcome to the first episode of Broadway Breakdown.
Feels like the first one ever.
The first one ever. It's been so long. We apologize. We're just very, very, very busy and important right now. And so just like...
Well, I was actually thinking, do we call this season two? I mean, I don't think we ever like had the idea of like it's going to be seasons, you know. But it feels like it's almost season two. I've grown so much since the last episode.
Welcome to All Stars.
Yes.
We've come back and grown from our experiences, and now we're more polished. We're fiercer.
Yes.
You know what? It's more like this is a winter hiatus. The way I would look at it is like it's our freshman season, and in the winter hiatus, like NBC or CBS just like, you know, gave us a little boost in the winter break. So that's all.
Or what I was thinking was like it's freshman year of college. You go back home for a month and you like forget what life is like in college. And then all of a sudden it's January and you're like, oh, I have to go back to working and not sitting like, on your butt and eating like cookies all day.
Yeah. Well, that's what I did in college. But I was going to say like back when like my skin was looking so good when I went home because there was no stress. And then I went back to the stress and I was like, ugh.
Girl, I am like a teenager right now. Like I have such a patch of pimples on my like non-existent chin/jawline. Like I honestly look like an extra from Freaks and Geeks. It's quite amazing what stress can do to a bod, especially a bod this susceptible to like imperfection. You know?
Yeah, you're already in a very vulnerable state.
Yeah, no, that's yeah, like one that like God made. I was like, oh, this one's gonna be a lifer, but good luck.
See, I'm like, when I get stressed, like I lose weight, but not in a way that like is attractive. Mm-hmm. Like it's not like I lose it in my face and my jawline gets so defined it could cut bread. It's just like I lose weight in like my chest area, and I start looking like pigeon chested, and it's terrible.
Yeah,
No, I've been breaking out too, and I think. Like when I work out, what it happens is like I've been running for the last year or so, and I've had to like really exfoliate my my skin every day to keep it from like breaking out. And if I half-ass it even once, it's like, they come for you. It's terrible.
It does. It's kind of insane. Yeah, I honestly like I don't. It's so meticulously placed in these two patches on my face too. Like it's I'm just wondering if like. I don't know because
like they're sending a message to you. That's what they're doing.
Yeah, honestly, it looks like someone was like, "Oh crap!" Like someone's like, "I have to put this patch of braille on John's face to warn him about the future." Like honestly, that's the only plausible reason. Because I'm trying to exfoliate too, but I don't know.
I say, or that, or it's like now even blind men won't date you because they'll feel your chin. They'll be like, "I feel like you're so beautiful on the inside. Let me feel your face." And they do, and like
in braille,
it smells like help. Yeah. Head says help me, and they're like, oh, fuck, and they leave.
Yeah, in Braille, it's like, I don't know, like, what's, like, the worst thing someone could, like, read? Like, I support Trump. Like, that's what it says in Braille on my chin
right
now.
Make America great again.
Billy, I beg to differ with you.
How do you mean?
You're the top.
Yeah.
You're an arrow collar.
So why don't you tell all of our listeners? I'm sure they all know anyway, because I'm sure they all follow you.
I'm sure you guys
can
follow me on social media and like all that.
You're fun to follow on social media. Don't downplay it. You're fun.
No, I feel like people probably just assume that I died, and so they're like, oh, I guess that podcast is over because that fragile one finally died.
Oh my god. No, yeah, but so let explain to the audience where you are, because you're not dead. You're very much alive. You have the bone structure of a dead person, which means you're very defined, so that's a compliment. Yeah.
Death Becomes Her, I'll be co-starring in that with Kristen Chenoweth in a developmental lab coming soon to you.
Directed by Alex Timbers.
I actually am in I'm in Pittsburgh right now. I just opened a brand new world premiere of a musical at Pittsburgh CLO this week. This month has been like a dream come true mixed with like running a marathon in a way that like after doing Murder for Two for the last 3 years, I was like, I got this. Like anything else is going to be a walk in the park. And let me tell you, this was like, we were nowhere near the park. We were Sunday out of the park with Drange. Like it was like, it's been so hard. Like I'm old. I think like I know that I aged out of the Newsies bracket like quite a while ago, but like, I mean, I think I'm slowly becoming like, if John Cullum can't do the job, call John Wascavage because he's your next best bet. Like I've aged a lot. I feel like I sound more mature even in this podcast, honestly. I've seen that of a thousand lives flash before me. That being said, although it's been so tiring, it has also been the most exciting and fulfilling and like really cool show. It's a new musical that's like an origin story about the world's first superhero, and you don't really like realize how like cool it is like doing what we do until a costume designer is like, hey, I built from scratch a custom made one of a kind superhero outfit for you that like no one's ever seen before, and this is your iconic superhero look. And like you look at that and you're like, oh, that's really cool. That makes like every awful thing that actors have to do, like that's just like a really cool moment. And turns out people love superheroes. Like looking out in the audience over the last few nights since we've had audiences, like the smile on like older and younger generations' faces, like it's infectious. Like I'm just so happy right now to be doing a work that's like bringing joy to people. Because a lot of our last podcasts focus on the real bullshit that's been going on in the world. So it's nice to like, you know, have like,
yeah,
Have a Mo of Release. And that was my nickname in middle school. Mo of Release.
Mo of Release. That to make a great drag name.
Step into a dream. Black time is extreme. Welcome to my fantasy. We give good epiphany. So come and take my hand.
Tell us about you, Maddie. Tell us about all your exciting things.
Oh, so many exciting things. I have been working on my own project since we last recorded. Back in like end of November / early December, I want to say, I had an idea for a series, web series, TV series, whoever would just like want to look at it, I guess. And spent the last 5 weeks writing. I gave myself like the month of December. I was like, I'm going to write 2 episodes and then come up with an outline for a third, and then we'll see where we are. And then literally up until like last week, I ended up writing 5 full episodes. We did a reading of it. Yeah, we did a reading of it on Tuesday with a bunch of a bunch of my random friends who I love and whose opinions I really respect.
Mm-hmm.
We all sat down. We read through it, and let me tell you, folks, like I am a shady, judgmental whore. I have no problem.
Not what I thought you were going to say. Sure, yeah.
You thought I was going to say bitch?
No, I just didn't. I didn't think you were gonna go from like, yeah, we did this reading, and I'm a judgmental bitch whore.
I'm a judge. Like, I'm a judgmental bitch whore. Like, well, oh. I want to preface this with, I've been going to see theater my whole life. I, you know, see a bunch of movies. I see a lot of TV shows. I have no problems being like, Finding Neverland, the musical, is a piece of crap, and I don't think anybody worked hard on it whatsoever. That okay. said, yeah, unfiltered, whatever. I've had two coffees. That said, it gives you a whole new perspective for creatives when you write something yourself. Mm-hmm. And even like in a safe, even in a safe environment of like 10, 12 people that you know and love, and like you preface it with like, this, these are really rough, be kind. Like even then it, like I pretty much blacked out from the moment that, you know, everyone was reading the first page to the last page. Mm. And I was just so fucking terrified. It's really scary because
yeah, it is.
Yeah, like and like if it's bad, it's devastating. If it's good, you don't trust it completely. And yeah, so it was actually really fantastic. So like it's semi autobiographical. It's based on my current situation. I lived with two of my best friends for 4 years, and then due to circumstances we moved out, and mm-hmm. I moved in with my mom for the last year, which has been very nice. Like John's been here. It's yeah. It's a lovely apartment. My mom,
guys, it is a lovely apartment. Yes,
it is a lovely apartment. It's where we recorded a couple of our episodes mm-hmm. with Natalie Walker, Caitlin Kinnunen. But like it is not, when you're 27, what you want to tell someone on a Tinder date when they're like, oh, how do you afford an apartment on the Upper East Side? And you have to respond with, well, funny story, I can't.
My mom.
my mom. Like, never do you see someone check out so fast as when you're like, well, I'm actually with my mom right now. And before you can even say it's temporary, they're like, Norman Bates, get the fuck out of my car.
That's what I was going to say. Like, you might as well. Why were we already in their car? Oh, my God. Okay. Metaphorically speaking, John,
I don't ride cars with boys. I'm not Drew Barrymore.
Sure. I was going to say is you might as well just go like whole hog, and instead of like, you should just start answering and like giving the people what they want and be like, I live with my mother, or I live with mommy. Like, you shouldn't even call it my mom. You should just be like, yes, I live with mother.
Mother says the kindest things about me. Yes. A boy's best friend is his mother.
Mother gives me bonbons when I do a goodie.
Oh my God.
I'm actually not making up this character. This is actually based off of a real actor whose name is Edgar Oliver, who is a real-life walking Scooby-Doo villain character. I saw his one-man off-Broadway show a few months ago, and I've been obsessed with him since. But literally, he was a Shakespearean actor, and he's a playwright, but he talks like that. He's like, well, my sister Helen and I used to visit Mother. Like, I'm not kidding. If you Google him right now and watch videos of him, you will see that I'm doing a spot-on impression. But basically, I want you to be this person now. I want you to call your lovely, sweet mother, who I've met multiple times and I adore. I want you to just really be creepy about it now. So please take the note.
Of course. I mean, I'm already wearing like cardigans and walking around cursing young people for getting in my way on the sidewalk. I might as well just lean into it.
Cardigans and like cats that may have died weeks ago, but you drag them on leashes behind you.
I mean, in a lot of ways, I try to be like, oh yeah, no, like we're close, but you know, we have separate lives, whatnot. But like, cut to 4 days ago, we're sitting in the living room drinking Cabernet and watching the premiere of RuPaul's Drag Race that we DVR'd. Wow. Because,
there you go. There it is.
Yeah, folks. I got her hooked to it. By the way, like...
A boy and his mother
having very big opinions about Drag Race. It's very funny, by the way, to watch someone's reaction to the premiere not knowing any of the queens. Like, she did not know a single one of them.
Well, actually, and... I did that too. I mean, continue.
Really?
I did that too.
That's yeah, so it was interesting. So first of all, I watched the premiere with friends at a gay bar called Rise because Miss Fifi O'Hara was performing.
Oh, right.
Yes. I sent John this. So Fifi O'Hara was a contestant on season 4 of Drag Race All Stars 2.
And if you don't know that, you probably shouldn't be listening to this podcast. Yeah. So this is a Broadway podcast. Like, it's basically just like a gay podcast. And so this is a part of gay culture. Get into it.
Exactly. Like, it's just one step away from Kinky Boots if you want to like justify this. So,
and
like,
the winner is Kinky Boots.
Kinky Boots. For those of you who don't get that reference, you also should not be listening to this podcast, but yeah. We don't want to discourage you. We want to keep the listeners that we have already. So point is that I was like doing a story of my Drag Race experience at Rise. First time ever seeing it in a bar, by the way. And it was like mind-blowingly electric. I tagged Fifi O'Hara in it, making like some little joke, and she commented, and then she went on to like two of my Instagrams, and I sent John a screenshot because one of the things she liked was one of our photo shoot photos, and he was like, "What the fuck?"
I know. I was like, "Why you got Fifi liking our things?"
I don't know. I mean, if the I were besties, a better networker, yeah, if I were a better networker, then I would have gotten her to be on the show. But she's not really Broadway, so whatever.
No, she has a problem finding. No, find the note. The
key. Find the note. Find the. Here's the key because you can't seem to find one.
Oh my gosh!
But so point is, funny. Those of us who are watching All Stars 3 have a lot of opinions. We have our favorites. We have our least favorites. Some surprised us. Some didn't. Mm-hmm. It was very interesting watching it a second time with my mom. A, because there were certain things that I just certain details that I found, but also she doesn't know who any of the queens are. The only queen she remembered was Aja because she started with season 9.
Sure.
Yeah, so like she doesn't know any of the history of any of the queens. She hates Trixie Mattel and she hates Milk.
No, I mean I actually kind of hate Milk this time around too. She's so cocky now.
Yeah. Well,
she's
She's so full of herself. I honestly think that it's an act. I hear that she hasn't gotten very nice since she got more fame in the modeling world, but I think that
he's gorgeous.
She is gorgeous.
He's the most attractive Drag Race man ever.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's also important to note that all of his success post Drag Race has been him out of drag. Mm-hmm. But I honestly think that he's just playing the game in terms of like doesn't know how long he's going to be in the competition, so might as well say stuff that's going to get him featured in his confessional. That's honestly what it seems like they're all doing. He's not a terrible person. He was very nice on his season, and I haven't heard any horror stories about him. But yeah, I honestly think that's the game he's playing. But hates Trixie Mattel, doesn't like her makeup. I had to like explain the look and the name. It's a whole thing. My mom really liked Morgan McMichaels when she came in and then decided she didn't like her teeth or her performance. She loves Bibi Zahara Benet, which is like good for you.
I kind of do too though. I get this like Oprah vibe from her.
Totally. There's a conspiracy going around about Bibi's real role in the competition that I don't want to go into because if it is real, it would be phenomenal. If it's not real, I just got everyone's hopes up.
A twist.
But yeah, La Twist. It's the general consensus is that some people think she's not actually in the competition. It's a ploy.
Oh my god.
So we'll see. I think Rue plays a good long game, but she does. She really does.
We're doing a great job about talking about Broadway.
Yeah, so I think this is a good time as any to talk about one of the best drag queens out there.
Miss Patti LuPone. Is that what you were going to say? Because that's exactly
absolutely what I was going to say. Miss Patti LuPone. She and Sir Ben Platt performed on the Grammys last night.
Benjamina Platt.
Full disclosure, I did not watch the Grammys last night.
Me neither. Yeah, no.
I got home from work and then I decided to be a little productive and do some writing, and then the night got away from me. But so I watched Patti this morning, and then we actually had some technical difficulties.
Technical difficulties, actually. Hopefully, editing, you won't even be able to tell. But
I won't. Yeah, we're not going to tell you when it happened, so you can go back and listen 10 more times. I encourage it.
I lost the whole episode because my computer shut down in the middle of recording. So
no, like Stephanie J. Block, it was breaking down. But in that time, I also watched Ben Platt's performance. And I have some thoughts. Do you have some thoughts, Mr. Wiscavige?
Yeah. First, I'm going to start with the queen herself. I think people can kind of tell from my shtick, from my bit, from who I am as like a character, like, you know, that person that I present. Like, I love divas as much as the next gay guy. Like, I'm obsessed. You know, people, I'm the kind of person that, like, I got like 5 different texts from people who do not know each other, who all saw Bernadette Peters like on her first night, and like just like 5 different breakdowns of her performance. Like, that's the kind of person I am. People know I have an unhealthy obsession with Broadway and specifically divas. Miss Lapone has always been one for me that has always been very specific because I find her extremely talented. I find her, I mean, she's a legend. She's amazing. But I also find so many of her quirks completely ridiculous and just like not valid. Like, her quirks are I don't know. Like, we can't war paint. We couldn't understand what she was saying. If any other person on Broadway had that much of a roadblock in their performance where we couldn't understand what they were saying, we would have, like, the show just would have closed immediately. But because it was Tyler Lapone, just everyone forgave her. And that's one of the reasons why I'm obsessed. Because that just doesn't happen. That shouldn't happen, but it does. And it's amazing. So, that all being said, I kind of, like, went into it with my little, like, flair of, like, here we go, here she is, in this, like, kind of, like, knockoff White Evita dress, like, giving me full Lloyd Webber, like, regional production newsy set behind her. I don't know where that came from, that, like, weird scenery behind her. But, like, I was like, here she is. And, like, I'm not gonna lie, I loved it. Like, I did too. I kind of went in, like, being like, here comes, like, my next, like, campy video that I'm gonna make making fun of Miss Lapone. And, like, she's 60 fucking 8 years old. And, like, the vocal prowess that she still showed on that stage, like, I bow down,
Miss Lapone. In the original key, no less.
Yes, I know.
And, like, granted, Don't Cry For Me, Argentina is not...
It's not Evita's highest, yeah.
No, it's not the most challenging of all of the stuff that Evita has to sing. No. When you have New Argentina and Rainbow High, and even, like, literally right after the song is over, she has that, just listen to that. But, like, for 68, original key, like, I'm pretty sure there were a couple of D's in that song. Like, it's fucking amazing.
Yeah, and she navigated and like it was a very fucking pro. Like, I was just like, girl, yes. Yeah,
and so specific and so... with such laser focus, and every acting beat felt right. It was a truly magnificent performance.
It was.
And I'm in the same boat as you about Lapone. Like, she is a legend, and there's so much about her that I love. But over time, a lot of things that were, like, little quirky trademarks of hers became, like, what defined her in a very campy style.
Yeah.
Like the diction, like the heavy vibrato, like the, mm-hmm. like, no filter, candid opinion sort of situation.
Yeah.
But... like, that performance reminded me of why she mm-hmm. got to where she got.
Yeah. I mean, there were still vowel modifications that were going on that I was like, whoa, why, what?
Sure. But, like, sure.
But I loved it. I really loved it. And I just, like, my hat's off to her. Like, it was dramatic. It was, like, I'm not going to say it was campy, but, like, it was so high drama. And I'm sure there were maybe some people at the Grammys last night who were like, what's going on? For the most part, I feel like everyone in that room's jaw was probably on the floor. Because, like, I'm sure if you're watching that live, you were just like, holy shit. So I loved it.
But when you talk about, like, the high drama, that's sort of what made her performance in Evita iconic.
Yeah.
Because of, like, that melodrama that she brought to it. Because, like, the show is not high stakes. It's not even really dramatically sound. It is an exposition-heavy piece. And what made her performance click and what made her performance so legendary is the passion she brought behind it that made you feel something that honestly isn't truly there in the material. And it's why, like, you know, everyone gets compared to her. It's like it is the gold standard in that role. She showed you why she reigns supreme. So
yeah, I don't think anyone's ever really gotten close to touching her in that role ever.
Not at all. And like, I'm willing to play a fair game for most divas. I would like to give everyone the benefit of the doubt, but even like the best after Lapone is like not even still on her level.
Yeah, completely. So that's one of the performances. And the other was someone that I'm a huge fan of as well, Mr. Ben Platt. And I support him so much. And I love him and I adore him. And I think he is so fucking talented and his voice is amazing. I cared for some parts of it and others I just didn't. I don't know. It was such a like, it, It wasn't my favorite of his. I guess that's what I could say.
Yes. So during our technical difficulties, folks, I watched the video and then I promptly went to where you should go if you want to read healthy, you
know, all that chat
feedback. Yeah, all that chat, Broadway World, like, you know, go to the message boards, see the wonderful, stupid critiques that people have. Mm-hmm. But the thing that was most common was everyone saying, you know, like, every problem I had with the performance wasn't actually because of him, but more because of just sort of the setup, which
I do agree with that as well.
Yeah. Like, as you said, I'm a big fan of him. I think he is one of the most talented,
no one can deny his talent,
young gentlemen. Yeah. And, like, definitely one of the best voices out there right now, and, like, yeah, a very smart actor, smart song interpreter. If you're going to honor Leonard Bernstein, and, like, that's what the song was for. It wasn't them going, like, and here to sing something random, here's Ben Platt. They're, like, here to honor what would be Leonard Bernstein's 100th birthday. We are singing a piece of his. It almost was like they were doing an in memoriam, but not. So, like,
yes, I felt that as well.
Yeah, I was like, if you're honoring one specific person with a work of theirs, like, perform it the way that they wrote it. Like, have the orchestra, have Ben Platt sing it straight. And if, you know, you want him to have some high money notes, you know, bring it up a step. So that way when he does the somewhere, that's like really big money notes. Because having him riff on it was not my favorite. And he did this sort of little clipped for us every single time.
Me too. That was actually the one that got me the most. The riffing I actually like could kind of forgive, because I was like, all right, here we are at the Grammys. I'm sure there was some vocal coach that was like, you know what we're going to do? We're going to spice it up. We're going to make it memorable. Because you have to take chances in life, and you do. And he took one, and I'm sure for some people it worked a lot, and I'm sure for some it didn't. But yeah, it wasn't devastating.
It just like wasn't my favorite.
For me, the thing that was the most kind of like eyebrow-raising was the clipped Us. And if you have not watched it, if you're going to watch it, you will notice it off the bat. Like, the second time he did it, I was like, oh, is he doing this every time? He was just going,
every time.
You know, there's a place for us.
For us.
Yeah. And it's just so abrupt, and it robs the whole point of the song.
Yeah.
You know?
Well, and it's one of those things where it's like, So when I studied musical theater in college, and we did a form of singing that was called techniquing of a song, exacting and then techniquing, which basically is, you know, boils down to you learn the song 100% mm-hmm. as it's written, like down to the like quarter note. Mm-hmm. And then you go from there, and through interpretation, you find, you know, some ways to make it not quite. Yeah, exactly. What that does is that it makes you really kind of find the importance of, you know, how the song is written, like what, say, like Leonard Bernstein or Stephen Sondheim is going for by having a whole note there instead of like mm-hmm. a quarter note or something like that. And then you kind
it for
of
a reason.
Exactly. Like, and then you figure it out. And so I feel like if you're gonna do a little clipped for us once, maybe once. Twice exactly. Over the entire song, because when you do it every single time, you're not only robbing the song musically of its beauty, but you're also like, you're robbing your acting choice of its importance, because when you do it every single time, it stops being important. Yeah. It's like the equivalent of underlining everything.
Well, and that was one of the things that became very evident to me, because I watched them back to back this morning. Mm-hmm. Was that here was Patty, who was giving full acting beats in her performance. She like went to the Grammys, which is not where people go to act a vocal performance, and she did, and it was mm-hmm. amazing, and it was brilliant. And he took a musical theater song, and he was like, I'm gonna pop it and not act it, like, you know, I'm gonna treat it like a pop song. And it just and of course artists do that every day. People have been doing that for decades, and it's not a bad thing. I love it most of the time. I mean, Barbra Streisand, like, where would she be without doing that? But it was out of the two performances, Miss Lapone, you got my vote. I know you've been waiting for it. I know she's been sitting there waiting next to her phone, waiting for the text of, oh my god. Mm-hmm.
And now she can sleep easy tonight.
She can. She really can. Mm-hmm. I love my day off voice that I'm giving everyone too.
The little vocal fry, yes. deepness.
I'm like a Zaddy Kardashian.
Hey kids, Zaddy's home. The bar that I was at when I was watching Drag Race, when Milk said Zaddy's home, the closed captioning said Zaddy with a Z.
Yes.
I was like, okay, I guess that's how we're spelling that now.
Yes, whatever homo closed caption that episode.
I want that queen's job.
A friend of mine used to do it for other reality shows. I actually really thought it was a really great job. I was like, I would love that job.
Yeah,
closed captioning reality shows. It gets annoying and repetitive because you keep having to rewind. But I've done that before for other things, like stealing scenes from movies.
I've had to do closed captioning when we had Alex Boniello on Baking It on Broadway because it was the Def West production of Spring Awakening. He requested that we do closed captioning for all the content, for all the fans.
Oh, that's brilliant.
Isn't it? He's an actual good person, which
I actually just started reading an article about him, like right before this podcast, and I didn't finish it, that his girlfriend wrote about micro cheating, which I didn't know was a thing, but it is apparently a thing. And I guess she did that.
Micro cheating.
It's apparently the thing where you, to me, micro cheating just sounds like millennials labeling things that is just like being a human. Like, it's like when you contact someone of a different gender, even though you're already in a relationship, and you like tag them in a meme just to like, or like when you meet someone and you become Facebook friends with someone of the, or like, or not of the opposite gender specifically, but of like, of your like specific preference, and they message you like, so nice to meet you. And you, instead of just like being like, you too, you instigate a further conversation. And it doesn't need to specifically lead to like overtly like, relationship developing, but I guess basically micro cheating is flirting.
Yeah,
so, like that's like what it sounded like to me. So basically his girlfriend did this she did this experiment where she micro cheated on him for 6 weeks, and I was about to finish reading it, and then you called me. So it's just random that you brought him up.
And it's it all comes full circle. That's
it
why
does won't he do it.
I mean, that,
that's my new phrase that I've been throwing around all the time because it annoys me the most right now. So
say it
I'm
again.
Using it all. Won't he do it? People use it all the time in reference to God. And it just, it makes no sense to me. Like,
no.
Won't he do it?
Oh, okay. Won't he do it? That's, I don't.
Sure, I guess. I don't know. Won't he?
I don't know. I don't know. We're not Facebook friends, God and I, so I don't know what he'll do. Or she'll do.
I'm sorry. That was a really good tangent for our first tangent back. You had started to talk about.
I was trying to keep it into the Broadway mold, and then blim, blam, blam.
So quickly. So far, like, so quickly.
Didn't you miss us? This is what you've been missing for the last month and a half. So, like, it's a lot of word vomit we got to get out. Oh, I also saw a meteor shower last week.
Oh, I saw it right during the holidays. We could talk about that. Yeah, let's talk about that. Let's do something we're supposed to do.
That's Broadway. Yeah, let's chat about it.
Do you want to start or should I start?
I'll start since I saw it most recently.
Great.
I enjoyed it for the most part. It was like super fun, quick, enjoyable piece. The thing that surprised me most was actually how much I enjoyed Amy Schumer. Which,
me too.
Yeah, I'm like, that's not a dig to her because I'm a fan.
I watch her show.
I'm like not a fan. I'm not as big a fan as I was like a year ago.
Yeah.
Like when I got on the Amy Schumer train when Inside Amy Schumer first started airing, and I thought like the show was so brilliant.
It
is so brilliant.
I didn't watch it for years because I was like, I just don't think I like her humor, and boy was I wrong. Like,
yeah, no, that show is genius.
Yes.
But somewhere along like the last year or so, maybe because she's been overworking herself and spreading herself a bit thin with some of her endeavors, I didn't find some of the most recent stuff she put out to be my favorite. So it wasn't that I went into Meteor Shower going like, prove it to me, Amy Schumer, but I no longer held her to such a high pedestal of like, oh, she's gonna be brilliant. I was like, hopefully she'll be good.
Yeah,
and she was actually very delightful.
She was like, was she the pinnacle of like Stanislavski acting technique? No, she wasn't. But was she really freaking funny? And like, did she do her job? And like, did she make like what could have been a really weird play hysterical? Yes, she did.
Yes,
because it's not a normal play.
No, that's the thing. My biggest problem with the show is not so much the writing, although I did think that Steve Martin kind of did a cop-out at the end where it was like, don't try to go deep now with, like, what the characters' like purposes are. Like, just, like, you're it was almost like they were trying to justify the play being as light as it was. I was like, no, just keep it short. And then my other problem was Jerry Zaks's constant blackouts, which I thought really kind of messed with the pacing.
Yeah, it was very jarring.
Yeah. I just didn't think it that's a play because it's so abstract, because the scenes do kind of go all over the place. The play experiments with timelines and structure and yada yada yada. Yeah. And sorry, you go ahead.
I was just gonna say, I guess without the blackouts though, like, how would we know when we're like starting something? Like, because I mean, it's not just like playing with like time. Like, I mean, it's like literally like two, like, or three. I mean, I lost track. Like, very different storylines that could have happened. It was almost like the way that I kept explaining to people right after I saw it was like, it's almost like the ending of Clue.
Yeah.
Like, you'd think something was happening. You'd be like, oh, and then there'd be a complete reset. And sometimes it'd be from like different points of view or from like different points in the reset of the timeline. But like, it was very much similar to that. And like, this could have happened, or this could have happened, or this could have happened, or this could have happened. Although the blackouts I wasn't the biggest fan, I honestly don't know how else he would have done that with like a complete reset. Maybe you do.
My director brain. It's not the blackouts in theory I had a problem with. It was how long some of them would go for, because there were times when they would do a blackout, but they would still like Jeremy Shamos would have a speech with like in a spotlight while that would happen.
And sometimes it was the same speech and sometimes it wasn't. And that's what confused me. Like,
yeah. I mean, in the second half specifically, like when the shit sort of hits the fan, dramatically speaking, that's when there would be moments where like it would be blackout with the classical music playing while the set turned around, and it would be like a solid 20 seconds until the scene started again. Mm-hmm. And that's the killer. Like, do a blackout if you need to, especially in a play like this that's so abstract and, you know, the scenes are all over the place, but you can't have it go for that long. That's what killed it for me.
Although it was almost worth it for the moments of those blackouts when he would send Laura Benanti out there and she is doing her like dances. She is doing a dance on Broadway that is so funny. Like, she is actually, her whole performance in that show, I was trying to also explain it to someone and I was like, it almost defies explanation what she's doing, because she's doing like a mix of like aloof mixed with like really conniving mixed with like really sweet. Like, I loved her performance in it. It was so funny. She was so funny. I really, really enjoyed it.
She's a really gifted comedian.
Yeah, I mean, I thought the four of them were amazing, but specifically Amy and Laura just really stole the show for me and like made it worth it.
Absolutely.
But yeah, bizarre show. Really weird show. That being said, I laughed a lot. I really did. I really quite laughed a lot.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. There's a lot of good humor to it. The two biggest laughs of the night came from an ad lib from Amy Schumer.
Oh, really?
So
I wonder if it's a real ad lib or not. I wonder if she did it the night.
Maybe. I don't think so, because it was things that happened from the audience. About 15 minutes into the piece, they're all sitting down on the couch, and I'm in the mezzanine, and it was a matinee, so a lot of older people, and a gentleman, I want to say like mid-70s, is in the mezzanine, like maybe a couple of rows behind me, and his phone goes off, and it's a small theater, like it's 700 seats, like if your phone goes off, everyone can hear it.
Yes.
And because he's on the older side, he either didn't notice it right away, or he like was slow going to turn it off, like was not embarrassed enough to like rush to turn it off. He was like, oh, I'll take my sweet time. So Amy Schumer literally stops the scene, gets up and goes to the landline telephone and goes, what? Huh? No? Oh, right. It's coming from the audience, and goes back to the couch. And
oh my God.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, that didn't happen. That's brilliant.
And then, of course, like the entire audience, applause. And then there's a second, and Laura Benanti goes, "So before we were rudely interrupted," and they go back into the scene. And then a second time it happened when Amy Schumer's character is talking about her, like, exploding head syndrome. She has, like, the exploding headaches.
Very weird. Very weird thing.
Yeah, very weird thing. And while she's doing it, someone was, like, unwrapping some sort of candy in the audience. Oh. And I'll never understand people in the audience when they do this. They think that they're, like, being respectful by opening it slowly because they're like, oh, it's
the
less
longest
noise.
Unwrapping ever.
Yeah, they're always like, oh, the slower I do it, like, it'll be less sound, but it's going to go on longer. It's like, just give me, like, 3 seconds of crumple, crumple, crumple and get it out. Like, don't give me 30 seconds of crickle. Crickle. Yeah.
Come
crickle.
On, Deborah. Just get your damn Ricola out.
Yeah, get it out, Deborah. But so literally, as this person's doing this, it's while Amy Schumer's talking about her exploding head syndrome, and she's like, and I get this noise in my head. It's sort of like when someone's opening a Werther's in the third row of the orchestra. And again, like, everyone died. Laura Benanti broke character. She, like, stuffed her head into a pillow. It was perfect.
That is brilliant. Yeah. Those were not things that happened during my show, and now I'm kind of upset. Because actually, at least two phones went off when I saw it. I have not seen a play on the Broadway that has not had a phone go off in a very long time.
Yes. I mean,
and I'm sorry. I'm sorry to our older listeners if we have any, but it's always you guys.
It always is. Absolutely,
you guys.
You
generation, you baby boomers can blame us for everything that you try to blame us for. Say that we're vain. Say that we're obsessed with ourselves. Say that we are going to ruin society with computers. You guys don't know how to turn off your fucking phones.
No. I will say... So,
you were the demise of theater.
I want to get on my platform for a second. Our few listeners. Again, don't want to make anyone super upset. But, like, I've been clocked for... No, underdressing for the theater because I'll, like, go to see a matinee randomly and be wearing, you know, jeans and a button down. And someone's like, ugh, like, you're so underdressed. And I do an Instagram before the show and people are like, oh, that's so disrespectful. And, you know, I turn right to airport the second before it goes to curtain. But every time a phone has gone off or someone unwraps food or someone is late, it has never ever.
Talking?
Someone is talking. It has never been. Someone of in my demographic. It has never been anyone, you know, 30 and younger. I will see, like, parents loudly explain things to their kids. I will see couples loudly talk to each other about something else. I see people come in an hour into a show and make up. And if you're that late, I would be super embarrassed for myself. They have no apologies and they're like stomping on in. And it's always people, usually like 35 and older, and I'm not saying that everyone in that age, in that demographic does that, because that's a big old demographic.
It is.
But every time I see it happen, they are no younger than 35, maybe even 40. And it's and it makes me mad. Because
it makes me furious.
And it's almost as if
flames.
Those, like, elderly flames on the side of my face. Thank you, Madeline. It's almost like those elderly theater goers. It's like, because I get this too in my restaurant. They are so demanding in a way that's almost like, I dare you to challenge me. I've lived through so much. You should bend to my will. And
yeah. I mean, to be honest, we probably are going to get like that too.
I'm already like that.
Every generation. Yeah. Like, yeah, me too. Kind of. I'm like, you don't know what I've been through. How dare you tell me that you're at a Pike Place?
Like, when I get on the subway, I'm like, you give me that seat. Don't you know I've been on my feet for 4 hours?
Exactly.
No, but, like, I'm a pretty accommodating queen for the most part. But especially with theater, because it is such a shared experience. And it's one of the – and as we just found out with Meteor Shower, no experience is the same. Like, it's never going to be duplicated. And I'm like, don't you – and I got very lucky. I got a $40 ticket and – and everyone else around me probably paid four times as much. I'm like, for $160 for something that's not going to get replicated, don't you want to give it your full attention? Don't you want to give it your all?
Yep.
You're never going to get it again. And for something that costs so much. So, like, turn off your fucking phone. If you need a Ricola, I get that it's flu season. Unwrap it now. Like, try not to cough if you can, because, like, there's also a difference between someone who needs, like, who has a tickle in their throat and someone who wants the world to know that they're filling the silence.
Yes, there are. I had one of the worst people do that when I was just in Colorado last month, during Word of for Two, the last time I did it. Literally, it was so bad. I was like, I wanted to offer them water. Like, I was just like, I don't, if you're that sick, girl, just like, don't come. Like, I'm sure the theater can like do something for you. It's a very like welcoming theater, girl. Yeah. I don't know. The moral of the story is,
I saw it. Wait, side note. I want to say, when Glass Menagerie was on Broadway, I saw it once by myself, and then my dad was in town and he wanted to see it. And I felt so bad the second time we went because that audience was coughing the entire time. Mm-mm. And this is how I know that people can control it, because during the moment when the gentleman caller was like, oh, I'm actually engaged to be married, that audience became silent. And then the mm-hmm. last 15 minutes were, you could hear a pin drop. And the 2 hours before it, every 5 seconds.
Yeah. They're distracted. They're not paying attention. They're liars. They're dirty, dirty liars. Okay, well, we did it. We talked about Broadway.
We did.
We really freaking did it.
And now we're going to talk about remedial chaos theory.
Yes.
Not even entertaining it.
Yes, I just don't even know what that is.
It's a term I heard once, and I keep it in my back pocket to make me sound like I know something other than Audra McDonald's mix.
Like ticotalamenia?
What the fuck is that?
That's the nervous condition where you pluck out your eyebrows, your eyelashes. I don't remember.
Oh my god.
I think I have phallocor- it, so
that's why I know. phallocorgalagnia.
Whoa, what is that?
It is the sexual fetish of enjoying pain in your crotch.
Ouch.
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
We know words.
We do know words. I guess that explains why, like, they always, like, I feel like the most, like, typical, like, dominatrix thing they do on TV is like a woman, like, crushing a man's balls. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, is that a weird statement? Do I watch weird television?
Yeah, I say, do you just watch Sesame Street? Because that sounds like a typical Sesame Street episode.
It is. It's where Elmo gets his Big Bird crunched.
hello.
No.
Oh, yeah. No.
That's apparently my thing, everyone. I didn't know it was a thing. So I'm going to start incorporating into my vernacular on this podcast.
Would you say it's that thing you do?
No. Doing that thing you do. I guess it is, yeah. I guess yeah, it is. Go, yeah, it was pointed out to me recently by cast members that, like, I've been apparently doing this for months, where whenever I have a moment of, like, something not working or I just want to say no to it, instead of just saying no, I now go, no. Always the same notes. Always the same riff. You know, I guess it's my somewhere. It's my clipped us in somewhere.
It's your clipped us in somewhere, yeah. Every diva's got their signature riff, so don't worry about it.
Yeah, it's me. Listen, I love you all, and I love you, Matt. I'm exhausted.
Me too. I was waiting to find a way to get us out of here.
I'm just going to throw the towel in. I'm not going to, like, pussyfoot around it. Like, I love spending time with you all. But, like, I'm emotionally and physically drained. And I'm about to go eat some food and watch some American Dad. Because I'm an adult man. I pay my own bills. Telephone bills. Automobile. I don't have any automobiles. Okay.
That makes me very happy. I was trying to find a way to get us out, but I couldn't find a segue.
I'm just diving right into it. I'm just like, I'm calling the shots. Bye, everyone.
Amazing.
See you later.
So on that note, John, while we get ourselves out of here, let's pick ourselves a diva.
Yeah, I mean, we've already picked Patty, right?
I don't know if we have.
No, there's no way we haven't. You know what? I'm just vetoing anything we're doing right now because I just want to get out of here. We're picking Patty. Play us out, Patty, because you've renewed my love for you in one fell swoop.
Absolutely. Either we haven't had her before or she's going to Bibi Zahara Benet her way into this and come back again.
Yeah.
So the Queen Patty. Queen. All right. So until next time, this is Broadway Breakdown.
Bye, everybody.
Have a great day in the Lord.
In the Lord. Thanks, Patty. Take us away.
Won't he do it?
Won't he do it?
I heard you moan on your horn. Once was a voice that said, "Taken farewell." Hey, it's Leslie Odom Jr. here on the Broadway Podcast Network to tell you about the RISE Theater Directory, a program of Maestro Music. RISE is a national online resource designed to connect and empower backstage and administrative and creative theater professionals from underrepresented backgrounds. If you work or aspire to work in the theater community, this can help you find your next project. And if you hire theater professionals, search the RISE Theater Directory to find your next team. Create your profile now and get more information by visiting risetheater.org. That's theater with an RISETHEATRE.org. Because only together we rise.
Okay, round two. Name something that's not boring.
Laundry? Ooh, a book club. Computer solitaire, huh?
Ah, oh, sorry. We were looking for Chumba Casino. That's right. Chumbacasino.com has over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.